Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 4th, 2005. Today's session is Take Off Your Shoes, The Anguish Before the Holy, There Arose a New King, with Rabbi Robert Marks, in the Fireside Room. Disc number MAR-2005-01. Due to technical difficulties, this recording proceeds 5 minutes into the session.
Reading Exodus chapter 1, Eileh Shmos, these are the names.
These are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob, each with his household. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Dart, and Naphtali. Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. The total number of people born to Jacob was 70. I'm not sure we approve of that. Joseph was already in Egypt. Then Joseph died, and all of his brothers and that whole generation. But the Israelites were fruitful and prolific. They multiplied and grew exceedingly strong, so that the land was filled with them. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph.
Thank you, that's fine. Vayakom melech hadash al Mitzrayim asher lo yada et Yosef. There arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. Now without comment, keep that verse in mind and turn for 1 minute to Exodus chapter 20. What is in Exodus chapter 20? The ten, what is it? I hear it, a faint echo telling me that it is the Ten Commandments. Absolutely right. Exodus chapter 20.
Then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me.
Fine. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Whenever I talk about Egypt and the new king, I am sensitive that words have their political weight, metaphorical meaning. As you know, we Jews celebrate Passover, usually or inevitably in the spring of the year, in the month of Nisan, which is in the spring. And we celebrate the Exodus from Egypt. God passes over the Israel houses, spares the children of Israel as the process of painful liberation takes place. For many years, I was asked to conduct a Passover Seder at a Catholic church way out in the country near a town where I had a farm home. And I would go there 3 or 4 years and conduct the Passover Seder and talk about how the Jews were slaves in the land of Egypt, about how they built the store cities, about how they were persecuted and lived under Egyptian persecution. So obviously people liked it. Either they were masochists or they liked me, and maybe a little bit of both, because they like Holden Village, they invited me back. And I would conduct the Seder. And I would notice that in this Catholic church, which was rather large church for the small little town in which it was located, there was one table of people who never smiled. And it bothered me. So being the gregarious idiot that I am, I went up to the table inviting information. I said, you know, I've seen you here for a couple of years and you don't seem to enjoy this, and yet you come back. What is it? I said, we're Egyptians. ever since then, I have been so sensitive to any symbolism that makes any one people culpable of a general and continuing historic act. And of course, I don't need to tell this audience that we Jews are sensitive to that historical prolonging of one incident that can be so very painful. But I stopped Ingrid at a passage that said in the first chapter of Exodus, "Vayakam melech hadash asher lo yada Yosef." There arose a new king who did not know Joseph. Do you realize how many possibilities this verse has? Stop and think about it. Without looking at the text, can anyone tell me what it means? Give me an idea. I'm inviting you. I can't see you back here, but this is cake me or something. What could it mean? There arose a new king who knew not Joseph. Yes.
Was he from another country?
From another country. He was an invader, maybe. From another country. Okay. I'm not saying you're right. Don't look like you got the answer. I'm not saying you're wrong, though. What else? Yes.
The king was ignorant.
The king was ignorant.
Not knowing history.
He didn't know the history. Good. I'm not saying you're right either. That's good. That's good.
The king was a child and too young to remember and was being used as a figurehead for some power struggle behind the scenes.
He was being used as a power struggle figure, okay? What else?
The Israelites proliferated so much that they were so large.
All right. Now, all of you can see where I'm going. Anybody else before I give you the definitive answer? Obviously, there is none, right? What?
The king was ambitious and saw this as an opportunity.
An opportunity, okay, to get his...
But the king's heart didn't know him either.
The king's heart didn't know.
Intimacy was...
You're all... See, what you're doing, you are... I'm going to anoint you. All of you people who have spoken are midrashes. I declare you. You're a midrashes. Can you say that word? Midrashes. Okay. And those of you who have thought ideas are geniuses. Now, let us see how the Midrash, which is a commentary written in Palestine and in Babylonia, this was collected around the 7th century, but these were sermons that various rabbis gave. Maybe they weren't rabbis. They could have been brilliant women, although brilliant women were usually told their husbands in those days what to say, and then their husbands took credit for it. Alas. You're looking at me that way. We know each other so well, I know what she's thinking. Will somebody, Ingrid, please, you're my reader for today, who knew not Joseph. Go just a little bit and I'll stop.
This supports the view that it means a new king. But how will it be explained by him who maintains that it means his decrees were renewed?
Now, what this Midrash is saying already is that there, among the rabbis, an argument. Some say it was a new king. They're reading the text literally. There was a new king, he didn't know Joseph. What's the problem? Why didn't he know Joseph? And why does it say who knew not Joseph? Well, how could he not know Joseph? How can you not know George Washington? How can you not know Abraham Lincoln? You know, according to the Bible, it was Joseph who delivered Egypt from famine. It was he who provided, the resources and the planning that allowed Egypt to live for all these years. Go ahead. How will it be explained?
He replied, he made himself as if he did not know Joseph at all.
Why?
The rabbis say, why did they call him a new king since it was Pharaoh himself? Because the Egyptians said to Pharaoh, Come and let us attack this nation. To which he replied, idiots that you are, until
notice
now.
Notice that language, isn't that gentle? Idiots that you are. I mean, no Jew would talk to Moses like that, but of course it's okay in the Bible to talk to Pharaoh like that.
Until now we have been eating of their provisions, and how can we think of attacking them? Were it not for Joseph, we would not be alive.
Now this is the biblical point of view. Now you see, the problem is this. The Midrashes, the people who are writing this story from a Jewish point of view, and I'm using the word Jewish, I'm going to pause for just a moment, because according to our various religious traditions, we may want to distinguish the word Jewish from Israelite. After all, the Israelites were the biblical people. The word Jewish doesn't appear in the Bible. For us Jews, there's a tradition. There's a connection between the Israelites of the Bible and we who stand here today. And that connection is not only genetic, it not only has to do with history, more importantly, it has to do with the tradition of the ideas that are connected. And we can't draw the distinction between somebody called an Israelite or a Danite or a Judean and a Jew. There is a unity, a synchrosity, a connection between them that leads from that ancient stand in the desert where Moses took off his shoes and where I stand today meeting you and sharing with you your thoughts and mine about what this tradition stands for. Now these Midrashic writers could not possibly understand how Pharaoh could have forgotten what Joseph had done for them. And we have to ask, how does persecution occur? Well, if you'll share seriously with me the next few lines, you'll see a lot of different reasons for the rise of hatred. And there's a certain profundity here, I think, that I'm going to ask you to share with me as you read it. So, Ingrid, will you go on?
Because he hearkened not unto them, they deposed him from his throne for 3 months until he had promised them, I will agree to do all you desire, whereupon they restored it. Hence it is written, now there arose a new king.
So according to this Midrash, it is the same Pharaoh. Now, you see, there is a historic problem that the biblical theologians had. I'm convinced that for them, Pharaoh was the same. They couldn't conceive of the fact that there were several hundred years between Joseph and this new Pharaoh. It was Pharaoh. So this school has lost all sort of a time lag, and in the Midrash, that very often happens. Now, that shouldn't be so strange to you who are Lutherans. I assume there's some non-Lutherans here too. Because if you remember in Matthew, Jesus goes up to the mountain, and who does he meet with? He meets with Moses and Elijah. So what you see in the New Testament, you'll see much more in the biblical commentaries of the 3rd, 4th, and 5th centuries. The time isn't important. It's the event that becomes important. It's what occurred that becomes important. So that the Pharaoh, it's not important it's important for a theological reason, but not a historical reason. They're not interested in history. They're interested in the idea of what happened. So the Pharaoh can either be a new king totally, or the same one who has just had some sort of thing happen to him. Go on.
The rabbis commenced this discourse for this with this verse. They have dealt treacherously against the Lord, for they have begotten strange children. And now shall the new moon devour them with their portions.
Now, what does they have? They have begotten strange children. What does that mean?
They're normal.
Any of you begotten? What did you say?
They're normal.
So they were normal. I was about to do it a little differently.
How many of us can say?
They've begotten strange children. It could be intermarriage, I hear. Intermarriage. What else? Well, you'll see what the text says.
This teaches that when Joseph died, they abolished the covenant of circumcision, saying, "Let us become like the Egyptians." You can infer this from the fact that Moses had to circumcise them on their departure from Egypt. As soon as they had done so, God converted the love with which the Egyptians loved them into hatred.
Now, there's a little inversion in the verses here, which you'll see later on. In other words, God converted them. In other words, Jews were fine in Egypt as long as they kept their children loyal to their religion. And when they stopped being loyal to their religion, then God converted the love which the Egyptians handled for them into hatred. That's pretty simple. That's a little disturbing because it doesn't quite happen that way. In fact, maybe it's the opposite. But let's see now what other texts say about what happened, and then we'll be able to go forward. Here are two extracts.
Here are two extracts from the Midrash which interpret Egyptian hostility to Israel on these grounds. See, a new king arose. No, now a new king arose. The sages cite in this context the passage from Hosea 5:7. They have dealt treacherously against the Lord, for they have begotten strange children, and now shall a new one devour them with their portions.
Now you see how they're playing. This is Midrash. What's the catchphrase new? A new one. And they've taken a passage from Hosea and applied it to this passage in Exodus. A new king, now a new one shall devour them. As if Hosea, who lived long after Exodus, Hosea was predicting what would happen in Exodus. Well, that's biblical, you know, that's typical Midrash. No sense of time or of history, nor is there an effort to do that. They want the idea, and the ideas are connected. The words are connected. It's like some genius had in his mind. And you've got to realize, they memorized this stuff. They didn't read it on a Sunday morning. They didn't read their Gospels or their, as you say, Old Testament. We Jews don't use that word. It's the Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, the Torah, the five books of Moses. Nevi'im, the priestly parts of the Bible, Ketuvim, the writings, Song of Songs, Ruth, Esther. It's the same Bible, kids, I hate to tell you. But we call it a different name, but we certainly don't call it Old Testament.
This teaches you that when Joseph died, they abrogated the rite of circumcision. They said, "Let us be like the Egyptians." Because they did so, the Holy One, blessed be He, turned the love which the Egyptians bore them into hatred. To bear out the text, now a new one devoured them with their portions. Meaning a new king who arose and introduced new decrees. And the land was filled with them.
Amphitheaters.
Amphitheaters and circuses. Oh,
no, this is written during Hellenic times, during Greek times, later on. And what does it say? That the Jews became totally assimilated. And one can see an Orthodox rabbi saying, the trouble with you is you're going to movies too much. Yeah, I must confess to you, I brought with me this time a shortwave radio. I am addicted to listening to the British Broadcasting Company at night. I listen to it all night long. I sleep while listening to the radio. I really do. This is, don't tell Ruth that because she thinks I've turned it very softly. Ruth, you listening? And I listen to the radio all night long. And I tried to get, because, you know, radios don't work here. I discovered that 4 years ago when I was up here. And you can't, you know, I tried to make a telephone call, no. I tried to watch television, no. I gave a chess set to the village, it's disappeared. So I brought my shortwave radio with me, and I turned it on. I could get two stations. One was a jazz program out of Beijing. The other was an evangelist talking about them, the agents of Satan. And you know who the agents of Satan are? Hollywood. They are the HM and the Return of the Sith is full of evil symbolism designed to infiltrate the minds of sensitive children. And the War of the Worlds is worse. Hollywood. Well, now this guy is doing the same sort of thing. He's saying the amphitheaters. I mean, you know, our good Jewish kids are going to the amphitheater now. They're going to these games. And there is a connection with circumcision, incidentally, seriously. And that was, in Hellenic times, Jews, in order to go to the amphitheater, would cover their circumcisions, would pretend not to be circumcised, a lot of the young people. And this author is condemning that. Well, go ahead, just finish this.
The amphitheaters and circuses were full of them. The same point of view is expressed in Hamet Tadavar. They filled not only the land of Gotham,
Goshen.
You can tell it's time for me to go to the eyeglasses person again.
We didn't talk about Batman.
They filled not only the land of Goshen, which had been specially assigned to them, but the whole of Egypt. Wherever it was possible to purchase a dwelling, there the Israelites went. The fact that it states that the Almighty passed over the doorposts of the Israelites in Egypt implied that they lived together with the Egyptians. The Israelites were punished for violating Jacob's wish that they should live apart from the Egyptians in Goshen. The Midrash relates that they wished to be like the Egyptians.
A sin, according to this Midrash. But then I'm going to pause this, and you're going to have to help. What is in here that helps us to understand how people turn against one another? There are several clues in here that don't have, and don't tell me with circumcision, because that's obvious that this author was saying that that's the problem. But, you know, go on your own. Think a little bit. But what is it that turned the Jews, who were so welcomed by Pharaoh, into the land of Egypt, into people who became slaves and had to build store cities and were persecuted?
They must have felt threatened by them, the Egyptians.
Felt threatened by them, okay.
Covetous.
Covetous of?
Of their abundance, their wealth, their accumulations, okay. Their numbers.
Well, I get hung up with, it says, the Jews say, let us be like the Egyptians. And they say that imitation is the highest form of flattery. So if someone wanted to be like me, I'd really appreciate it. I don't see the...
You know, it's, thank you, because it is a problem for me, too. I mean, what is it that's happening here that isn't understood, that we ought to understand? After all, when I'm going to be with you this week, I don't want to just take a text from the Bible and say, well, this is what a commentator says. I want to know what we can say. What do we think? And you're pointing out a problem with this, right?
Yeah.
That to say they wanted to be like other people. Well, maybe for, you know, one of the problems we have in the integration struggle was that we didn't always have the black ministers with us in terms of open housing. That was a paradox. And it troubled us. Now, I could understand why. Now, and I'm not saying that there were a lot of them. But sometimes people would want to keep their own neighborhood untouched. But you don't want open housing. If you have your nice, comfortable, great church, you don't want urban renewal to come in and tear down your property. One of the things that I'm dealing with in Chicago, even today, although I'm retired, is the demolition of public housing. I mean, public housing is coming down. Now, we don't mind tearing down public housing, but unless you build housing to take its place, there are poor people in our society. There are hungry people. There are people who don't have homes. I studied Cabrini Green, and anyone knows Chicago, if you know where Cabrini Green is, you know where I studied Cabrini Green with some residents, and they were saying, you know, these developers want to come in, they want to tear down our buildings and build high-rise luxury apartments here. And I looked from Cabrini Green into the shining Water Tower Place, just a mile distance, and I could see the shining castles of this luxury shopping center and apartment moving ever closer to people who didn't want to give up their houses. People who lived in Cabrini Green. So this author is obviously saying that we want to keep this community together, and that's what's happening. But that doesn't create hatred among groups, and you're right in pointing that out. But what does then? What would be responsible for that sort of hinted at here? Yes.
I grew up in Kentucky, which is kind of mid-south, and in the 60s there was this whole concept that because we had some race riots in Louisville, and our church was involved in social justice work, and there were a lot of people there who were very uncomfortable with our minister's prophetic stance. And there was this whole rumbling about this phrase that kept coming back was knowing their place.
Yeah. Yeah.
These people should know their place.
And isn't that here?
Yes. Yes.
Don't you see it here? Good. Thank you. Don't you see it here that they don't know their place?
That's right.
What else is here? What else do you see here?
Well, the Israelites were chosen by God.
Yeah.
And they want to integrate with the Egyptian, and it doesn't please God. Didn't please God. Would God make Egyptian to turn it become hatred?
Okay. So you think there was a divine plan in all of this? That's interesting. Okay. And we'll see. We'll get back to that in just a minute. What else? Yes.
I think it's kind of what you're saying, that it would seem that they're forgetting their identity as God's children, and they're wanting to adopt the identity.
So that the forgetting circumcision then is simply a symbol for their forgetting their relationship with God. That's very good, too.
I'm looking at the Egyptians' point of view, looking at more recent history, when governments are having some problem, as indeed in Germany, they like to pick a scapegoat which attacks people and then gives them more power. It certainly happened in Nazi Germany.
Very good. Very good. What else? Because I have a couple other things in mind that I wonder, are we going to hear anything from the balconies?
There are just so many of those.
Isn't that implied
so
here?
There were a few, but now there are so many of them.
Well, we got a few blacks in our neighborhood, and that's fine. But how often have you heard? There just used to be a few, and now the whole neighborhood is overrun. Right. Isn't that what happens a lot when prejudice rears its ugly head? There are too many of them. Jews suffer from this. Italians. You know, one or two in the neighborhood, it's fine. One rabbi at Holden Village. I'd be in real trouble.
Someone.
Let me see what's
the other side.
I was thinking so many, but also in modern times, then our property values will go down. So along with the so many.
Yeah, but isn't there an implication here that there's sort of urban sprawl too? You know, they picked houses. It sounds like there were houses all over the place. Now, how do we know that there were houses all over the place? They even give the proof text for it, for the fact that they, you have to pick it up. But how do we know they had houses all over the place?
The angel had to hop from house to house.
The angel had to hop from house to house. Yeah. So obviously they were all over the place and they were totally integrated. Now that's a very troubling thought though, isn't it? Yes.
That's the thing, that people have an easier time with other people when they can see them as other and feel that they're safely encapsulated in their otherness. So if a community of people retains their culture and their cultural practices and identity and maybe clothing, appearance, then we know who they are. And it's easier, I think, than if the star-bellied sneetches, for those of you who are parents.
Yeah. Star-bellied sneetches.
Speaking about that, in terms of this community,
yeah.
Guests come in, and we all, we have no idea of really knowing who's staff, except for the few who get up and speak at the meal times. But the staff pretty much knows who guests are. Except there's those blurry people who have been here for a long time, for weeks, who are just guests, who are guests. And so, you know, I know that blurry stuff. You know, my children are saying, well, we're village children. No, they kind of don't know we're guests. And then this morning, someone, like, basically took my hand and said, this is where you put paper. See, it says paper. And I found myself like, wait a minute, I know where the paper goes. But all those boundaries start to get blurred, and you can just see how my space has been taken over. My place in the society is blurred, and you can see how the Egyptians would start to wonder who's who. Who am I?
I don't know a thing about this, right? But I'm going to... You have a winter village here, don't you?
Yes, we do. Village.
I'm sure there are never tensions between the winter village and the rest of the village, are there?
Never. This whole winter. Nothing forward to the summer.
Do the winter people feel proprietary? You know, this is our place.
A few times.
I live in a little, I'll get to you both in a minute. I live in a little town called Saugatuck, Michigan, since I left Ingrid. Ruthie and I moved to our summer home in Michigan, which we love very much. And I'm sure Ruth would want me to, would echo my invitation to all of you. It's a summer resort town, and she just loves to entertain people. Right, Ruth? see why she sits in the back sometimes. The hardware store in the village sends out a notice on September 6th, the day after Labor Day. And it usually goes like this. Well, folks, Labor Day is past. The summer tourists have left. You can come in and shop again at the There's that feeling. What else is there? One more thing before I want to try and wrap this up a little bit. You've been wonderful. Yes. There was somebody over here, too. But go ahead. Go ahead.
I think there's it's a two-way street. If the Israelites are starting to act like the Egyptians, I would assume some of the Egyptians are also going to act like the Israelites, which might freak out the Egyptians and have that sense of, our kids are coming too much like them.
There's no talk here of the hierarchy of priests, is there? Of the Egyptian religious order structure, which is interesting. That's a good point. I mean, what did they feel about all of this? See, so there's that mutual tension. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I hadn't thought about that. That maybe the Egyptians were starting to act like Israelites. And that was going to happen. But I continually bring up another point that no one... there was somebody over here. Was there somebody over here who had a hand up before? And
I have a question.
Yeah, back there. Go, I knew you did.
Well, a moment may have gone by, but I was thinking of the winter versus the summer communities, and I've been sort of observing this through a couple of cycles and thinking about it, and it just seems to me there's something in human nature that wants to identify your turf, and after you live on some turf for a while and you sort of identify your neighbors, you make your peace with them, and it becomes your place. And then all of a sudden, you know, this well-identified turf and friends is just totally overrun by people whose faces you haven't seen before, who you may never meet in their short stay. And it really, you know, I think there's an upwelling of indignation. It's just it comes from the human root.
It takes time to. I'm used to the two previous visits. I've come up the last week in June. And there are several people I've looked forward to seeing over and over again. Well, now I'm up here the first week in July, and those people who come up here the last week in June are here the first week in July. And it's a sort of a slight dislocation. Not a big one, but I can see you not knowing people. But there is one more thing that I want to bring up, and then maybe bring this.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah,
and maybe a really obvious, silly question, but is there obvious racial differences between the Egyptians and the Israelites?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure I have a perfect answer for it.
Okay.
For a while there was this belief that really modern Jews were not ancient Israelites at all, but they were really from southern Russia. And that sort of stuff, but there have been some genetic tests that seem to prove that there is a connection, a direct connection between modern Jews and ancient Israelites. So, but what they looked like, if you want to know how difficult that question is, look at the arguments about what Jesus looked like. I mean, you're aware that there's a depending on which cross you see it. Yes.
One thing, and Pam hinted at it when she spoke about what God does with us. It seems to me it's like the problem of theodicy. Why do bad things happen to good people? And so we've talked around all these things, why Egyptians would hate Jews because of assimilation. But it seems like the Midrash and the text both bring it back to, so God made this happen. So it's sort of operating on two levels, because how can you justify, how can you have an all-powerful Yahweh in here unless you ultimately give him the credit?
Right.
So it's just,
that's an interesting comment. And it does operate on two levels, and I'm going to continue to operate on both those levels, and I'm glad you perceive that. There is one more thing, though, that I want to throw into this collective thinking about why the Israelites were persecuted. And I'm going to confess that this idea has influenced me in my work in Chicago a great deal. And that is, there is an inference that Joseph, by feeding the Egyptians, did an unmitigated good thing. I mean, that's been taken for granted in whenever we read this text. And since working civil rights issues, and later through interfaith, the worker justice, I'm wondering whether doing things for people is as valuable as doing things with people. And the giver ultimately is resented. It was Maimonides, my favorite Jewish philosopher, who lived from 1135 to 1204 and spent his last days in Egypt, who said loaning somebody something is a great virtue, but helping them help themselves is the greatest virtue of all. And I just wonder whether one of the problems we can see them, so many of them here. We can see the number of them, the success of the Israelites is a problem. But maybe continually talking about what we did for you, as even the Midrash does over and over again, how could they hate us because we did so much for them? I had a rabbi, are there any bishops here? Let me see. Come on. No bishops here today, okay. They're usually here in hiding. A rabbi who once said to me a bit of profound wisdom, he said, of his congregation, he said, but this will be good for the pastors, he said, I don't know why he hates me so much. I never did anything for him. Well, let's bring this session to a close. And I want to bring it to a close the way we started. We started talking about there arose a new king who knew not Joseph. And we read the first of the commandments of the famous and important Ten Commandments. I am the Lord thy God, who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. The connection is clear. There is, in a sense, in all that we do, some kind of a divine plan that we can either ignore or see. But in this experience in Egypt comes a crucial part of our common faith. And that can be found on the other side of the page. And I'm actually going to ask our distinguished reader of the day to read it.
Do not wrong a stranger, and do not oppress him, for strangers you were in the land of Egypt. Exodus 22:20. Do not oppress a stranger, for you know the feelings of a stranger, since you yourselves were strangers in the land of Egypt. 23:9. And thou shalt rejoice before the Lord, the stranger, widow, and fatherless, and remember that thou wast a slave in Egypt. Deuteronomy 16:11.
What's the point of all this? There arose a new king over Egypt who knew not Joseph. Israel is plunged into slavery. Not only poverty, not only hunger, but slavery, where they have to do the will of another person. The beginning of this revelation, of this understanding, occurs in the central point of the Moses story, which occupies our theme all of this summer. It is take off your shoes. It is at that point, as we shall see, that Moses emerges from this system, either being on top of it or victimized by it, and begins to realize the potential that comes in realizing one thing, and that is the importance of the other. The other. The ability to go from ourselves into an awareness that there are people who suffer, who suffer more than we do, no matter what we have the matter with us. I always like to say, no matter how smart I feel I am, I could always walk down the street and immediately find 10 people who are 10 times as smart. No matter how much we are in agony, there is always somebody who suffers more. And I've learned to admire so much their suffering. And their peoples and our world are persecuted. Can we save them? We can't do everything. Can we do something? That's what this is all about. I think that's what Holden Village is all about. It's helping us become aware of the other. That whole business, whatever we've done today, has led up to, I am the Lord thy God who brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Forget Egypt. Out of the land of slavery. Slavery. There are people who are in all kinds of slavery. There's physical, and they're physical slaves today. Physical slaves. That's the most obvious form of slavery. But they're slaves to poverty. Ingrid Chris Johnson deals with people who are slaves to a system which condemns them sometimes, very unfairly. The people who are slaves to their fears. People who are slaves to their success. There are slaves in our society. And there are people who suffer from a lack of health care. Now, of course, you can't do everything, but your life is to do something. And finally, I'm going to close with a passage that says, Leviticus 25:55. If you'll just turn to that. Leviticus 25:55. Somebody read it to me, please. Ingrid, you're my reader today. Leviticus 25:55. I want to show you how this idea has gone full circle. Y'all got it? 25:55.
As a laborer hired by the year, they shall be under the alien's authority, who shall not, however, rule with harshness over them in your sight. Oops, that was that 53?
55.
It didn't sound like okay. 53. Shall I skip 54 and go right to 55?
I would skip 54.
I really have to get new glasses. For to me, the people of Israel are servants. They are my servants, whom I brought out from the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
I love this verse. Look what it's done. The idea of remember the slaves, remember, it occurs over and over again in the Bible. Over and over again. I just picked a few passages for now that talk about slavery in the land of Egypt. But what is the ultimate transformation of this? Yeah, you are slaves, but not slaves to Pharaoh, and not slaves in a foreign land. You are, if you are true to yourself, a servant of God, doing the will of God. How you define that? Well, we're going to talk about that more this week. But your role is never to be a master, but to be a servant of God and find the path. Thank you.